You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening in for our Tuesday episode, whether it's your first time listening to Locked On Seahawks or you're a regular listener. Jam-packed episode coming your way. We're going to be talking about a major addition with a little bit of international flair to the Seahawks active roster. And then we'll also be breaking down the reported undrafted free agent signings by the Seahawks to this point. And I'll be chatting with Zach Goodall of All Gators with the Sports Illustrated Network, taking a look at sixth-round pick Stone Forsythe and where he fits into Seattle's plans this year and beyond. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every day with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The Seahawks roster now has a little bit of international flair. The Seahawks today being awarded former German basketball-turned-football player Aaron Donker through the International Player Pathway Program. This is the fifth year that this program has been in place, Rob. They started in 2017, and how they do this is they draw a random division of four teams, and they allocate four international players that have applied for the program, and then they are allocated to those rosters. So this is the first time the Seahawks have gotten an opportunity to take a look at one of these players. And looking at the route that this kid has taken to the NFL, again, a former basketball player, he is a phenomenal athlete. And when he's had his chances to play on the field, whether in Germany or coming over stateside and playing for Arkansas State, he has been really productive with his opportunity.
He's been staggeringly productive. You know, I mean, he went and played at, New Mexico Military College and, New Mexico Military Institute for two seasons. And, put up some eye-popping numbers there this past season, in 2019, he played at Arkansas State. And then, of course, COVID hit and nobody basically was able to play at that point. But he is a really interesting guy, 6'2", 240 pounds, runs really well. I think the Seahawks are I think that they actually wound up getting maybe the best player of these four players that were allocated to the NFC West, as you mentioned. Alfredo Gutierrez, an offensive lineman from Mexico, was allocated to the 49ers. Another offensive lineman, Max Percher from Italy, went to the Rams. And then the Arizona Cardinals got a tight end, Bernard Sikovic, from Austria. And I'm probably butchering all of their names. But still, I think it's a really cool opportunity. It's showing how the NFL is increasingly becoming a global game. But I think that the Seahawks may have the best fit of all of them in terms of just pure athletic ability. And as we talked about before, Corbin, linebacker is a position of concern for the Seahawks.
I think that's the thing that's noteworthy here, because not only, I mean, I had a chance to look at all four of these players today once this information was released. And you look at the athletic traits. At 6'2", 240 pounds, he ran a 4.46 40-yard dash at the International Combine. He had a 39-inch vertical jump and 22 bench press reps. So we're talking about a player that if he did that at the regular NFL Combine at his size playing the linebacker spot, he would have been one of those players that would have been blowing up his draft stock coming out of Indianapolis. And so you watch the video that came out on the Seahawks social media today with Pete Carroll, Ken Norton, and a couple other assistant coaches calling Donker and telling him that he was going to be joining the Seahawks. And obviously Pete Carroll's always excited about everything. The guy is just oozing enthusiasm, but he took it to another level with Donker. And I think he's really fired up for the opportunity to coach this kid. You mentioned the fact that they've only got a handful of linebackers on the roster. Not only is he the best athlete of the four players that were allocated through this program this year, but I think he's got the best positional fit of any of those four players, looking at what the Seahawks have in their roster to potentially make the team. And for our listeners that wonder, well, you know, this can't be a good pathway to get onto an NFL roster. This program, as I said, is only in the fifth season that it's been around, and yet there have been three players that have played in NFL games that have come through this program, and all three of them, I believe, are still in the league too. So they haven't been short-term success stories. These guys have been able to hang around, and it shows the program really is working, unearthing quality players that in the past never would have gotten an opportunity to play in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm happy that you mentioned that. I mean, a couple of guys, Jacob Johnson, was a fullback for the Patriots a couple of years ago. And so he's an interesting guy. I mean, he had 11 starts just this past season for the Patriots, 20 games played over the last couple of years. Bills defensive end, Efe Obada, he was in Carolina for the last couple of years, had 5.5 sacks while playing for Carolina last season. He's now in Buffalo. He's an interesting player. And then Jordan Mailata, from Australia. He's the offensive tackle that wound up starting 10 games for the Philadelphia Eagles last year. You know, I remember watching this kid on tape, Mailata, and I just couldn't believe what an athlete that he was. You know, you might remember, and certainly some Seahawks fans, Pacific Northwest fans, will remember that the Philadelphia Eagles invested a first-round pick in Andre Dillard from Washington State a couple of years ago. When I watched Mailata on tape, I thought, this is the better player. You know, he's a better athlete, and that's saying something, because Andre Dillard is a terrific athlete. So, you know, we're talking about a really intriguing player here. And you mentioned the athletic ability that he possesses, and, you know, how his stock would be absolutely skyrocketing if, you know, if he had been a traditional going to the NFL draft. I mean, there were a couple of guys who wound up, you know, blowing up their pro days, their workouts, and both of them wound up being first round picks, including Zaven Collins going to the Arizona Cardinals, and then Jamin Davis going to the Washington football team. So those are the types of numbers, Corbin. 6'2", 240 pounds, running the 4.4, 39.5-inch vertical. My goodness, that's first-round caliber kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see here, he's obviously going to be coming back to the States. He's going to get his opportunity to go to the Seahawks rookie minicamp, which is scheduled for the 13th through the 15th of this month. And then if there are other organized activities, he's going to continue to have opportunities to impress the coaching staff and continue to learn the game. He's only been playing football for 5 years. I think they're going to give him a shot to play Sam linebacker at that size. At 240 pounds, he's got experience rushing off the edge. He's dropped back in coverage. He's got the athleticism to do it. So I think you give this kid a shot at Sam linebacker, and if he wants a chance to get onto the field, as you mentioned, there are a few guys that have been able to do it from this program. Find your way on the field on special teams, and Pete Carroll made sure to emphasize that when he was talking to him on their video conference today. And I thought the thing that was most fitting with Doncourt during the middle of that, he made sure to tell Pete Carroll, I'm going to make your team better. So he's got confidence going into this situation, and that's going to make it a really fun storyline to follow here over the next few months. And what really is the cherry on top, and I think this is a great part about this program as well, a lot of these players need time to develop. So the league allows teams to keep those players with an extra practice squad exemption. If they're not going to be making the active roster, the Seahawks could have 11 players in their practice squad instead of 10. And that really provides great value and incentive to really try to develop these players and give them a legitimate chance to eventually make an NFL roster.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that. I think that's kudos to the NFL for having the foresight to be able to do that. Now, of course, if Donker was able to make Seattle's active roster, then that would, you know, he would have to be one of the active roster type of players. You wouldn't have that same type of flexibility. It's not like Seattle would be able to keep that 11th player on the practice squad at that point. But still, it does provide teams an awful lot of flexibility, and as you said, and the opportunity to explore these different options and allow this wonderful game of American football to be able to spread all throughout the country, all throughout the world.
And I think Pete Carroll would be perfectly fine if this kid proves to be good enough to make the 53-man roster. I think he would be fine with that exemption not existing. So I think that would be a perfect situation for the player and the team if that happens. I'm really excited to see what this kid can do on the field. Certainly has a ton of physical gifts. If it translates at a Sam linebacker or even weak side linebacker position on special teams, then he has a chance to be that next player through this pathway program that can find his way onto a 53-man roster, and the Seahawks will gladly welcome athleticism anywhere they can find it. When we come back, we're going to be looking at the reported undrafted free agent signings by Seattle so far. None of these are official. The team has yet to release an official list, but we're going to break down the list of 12 players that reportedly have been signed at this point. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of the UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today, rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring. Ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece, they're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10x10. This collection features high-quality, fine jewelry that will surprise and delight, and fairly priced so that you can give her something special and truly meaningful. When I looked at several of these rings, Michelle Fontici's ring stood out as the one that I'd buy as a gift. It's a great conversation piece, unique and cool. Make sure to check all these out. If you're on the hunt for the perfect, unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10x10 only at BlueNile.com. Welcome back, 12s. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. The Seahawks have been one of the best franchises in the NFL at finding and developing undrafted free agents. During the John Schneider and Pete Carroll era, we've seen Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse, most recently Puna Ford and Brian Monet. It feels like every year the Seahawks have an undrafted rookie that's able to step in and make an impact. Even this last season with the COVID-19 issues, not having a preseason, not having a normal offseason program, Cedric Lattimore stepped in the playoffs and gave him six tackles against the Rams in his NFL debut. So it seems like every year they get some kind of a contribution from former undrafted free agent signings. And this year is especially intriguing. As we've talked about time and time again, Rob, the Seahawks only making three selections in the 2021 NFL draft. It gave them quite a bit of ammunition to be able to recruit players. And when you look at the 12 reported undrafted free agent signings so far, they were able to get a number of really talented players to come out to Seattle. And I think a big reason for that is there's going to be a legitimate opportunity for several of these players to be able to push for a roster spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not just Seattle's track record of giving undrafted free agents real opportunities, real playing time, going up against the ones, seeing what they can do. It's the fact that Seattle's roster, you know, right now is just simply smaller than a lot of the other NFL teams out there. There are jobs available. So I think that this was a really interesting destination for a lot of these undrafted free agents. We talked about before, I think that was absolutely part of Seattle's strategy to trade out of the seventh round and be able to make those contacts with the players that they thought might be able to slip through into free agency. And I think that gets kind of greased the wheels that much more. I think this is really going to be an intriguing group. You know, just kind of looking at the list of players that are being reported out there, because as you mentioned, the Seahawks have not officially announced that these are the players that they have signed. But just looking at what has been reported from not only Seattle, but for some of the other clubs out there, Corbin, I think Seattle has the best group of undrafted free agents this year. At least that's what it looks like on paper at this point. I'm eager to see these players, you know, up a little bit closer. But, you know, I think that basically just about every position you look, whether it be along the offensive line, I like a lot of the big bodies that they brought in. The running back, there's some backs there that have some juice. At the wide receiver positions where I'm especially intrigued, because Seattle has a couple of guys here that are, you know, basically different styles. I'm going to start off with Tamorian Terry from Florida State. I mean, 6'3", 200 pounds, and he's got some juice to him. He can really make some people miss. He's got the power. So to me, he is very different than one of the one of the better special teams players, Connor Weddington from Stanford, that were available in undrafted free agency, and a local product, played his high school ball out here in Sumner, I believe. And then I know you're a big fan of South Dakota State's Cade Johnson.
Johnson to me is the best player that is on this list of 12 that's been reported. I had a fourth round grade for him, so for him to slip out of the draft completely, there were a few guys like Trill Williams and Darius Stills that I had mid-round grades like that on that did not get drafted. And every year you're going to have some guys fall through the cracks. I think this year, especially with all the issues that we had without medicals and not having a combine, there were going to be some head scratchers. And Cade Johnson is one of those. But I think the Seahawks can reap the benefits of that, because now you're getting a player that he's not the most explosive athlete. But, I mean, a 4.5140 is not a bad 40 time. I think, you know, we all get lost in the 4.4s and 4.3s. A guy can be a really effective NFL receiver running in the 4.5s. And Cade Johnson is one of the better route runners in this class. He put it on display at the Senior Bowl. And, oh, by the way, he scored 29 touchdowns in a three-year span. I don't care what level you're playing at. That is impressive. So I think Cade Johnson and Terry both have a chance to be able to get onto the roster. And the other receivers that are coming back behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, you better be watching behind your back, because these kids are coming.
No, exactly. You know, and that's the thing, is the same thing along the offensive line. You know, I'm really interested to kind of hear a little bit more about the Stone Forsythe story. We're going to be talking about that in the third quarter here. But again, same kind of story here in the undrafted free agents. Greg Island from Mississippi State. I've been watching this massive man play for the Bulldogs here for, it feels like, the last decade or so, because he has seen a lot of playing time for Mississippi State, played in the tackle position as well as guards. So you like that type of positional versatility. And he's 6'7", 6'8", 330 pounds. So he's an interesting one. Jake Curran from Cal was a four-year starter there, most of the time at the right tackle position. And there have been some talk that he had a heart issue, and that might be why that he wound up slipping through the draft process. But I know some scouts out there that thought that he was a fourth or fifth round talent. So again, assuming that Seattle is going to clear him medically, assuming that he is actually on Seattle's that he is being invited in, as has been reported, then Curran from Cal is another one who I think could really surprise some people. Then finally, the Canadian, Pierre-Olivier Lestage. I mean, is a guy who has interesting power. To me, that's one of the things I like most about him. He is projected to possibly play center, played a lot of guard at the Canadian level. You just see the way that he just drives people off the ball, really physical, aggressive player. So to me, again, you have a tackle, you have a guard, you have a center candidate. I think that Seattle really did do a nice job of trying to address some of their positional concerns through undrafted free agency.
And I could see Kieran being a player that, because of his pedigree, again, you mentioned a four-year starter in the Pac-12, that is a player that might be able to push somebody like Cedric Abuehi for a roster spot. I mean, I could see a situation developing where the Seahawks are like, you know what? We're going to have two really young guys, two rookies that are going to be behind Duane Brown and Brandon Shell. They might be building their tackles for the future in the same season, because, as you mentioned, there were a lot of scouts and a lot of draft experts that had a draftable grade for Jake Kieran. And so if his medicals check out, that's the big deal here. That's the big question mark. Then certainly he has an opportunity to be able to compete and he's mostly played that right tackle spot. I would anticipate that's where he's going to be if he's going to make it in the NFL. And at Lestage, I love the film that I've gotten to see. Somehow I got a hold of some all 22 on this kid. And yes, he's playing against much inferior competition, so you got to keep that in mind. But he had a Shrine Game invite, so clearly he is a player that was on the radar and was affected by not being able to play in 2020. They didn't have any games in during the 2020 season because of COVID. And so if they would have had a season, he might have been a player that got drafted because he's light on his feet. He moves well, and he plays with a mean streak. So he's one of the players I have checkmarked on this list that hopefully I will get to go out to the field and be able to see a few of these guys because I'm intrigued by him as a potential developmental center behind Ethan Posick and Kyle Fuller. And then you look at the other players that they brought in. Brian Mills, the corner out of North Carolina Central. There were several mock drafts that had him getting picked by the Seahawks because he's that long, athletic corner that they generally have looked at in the past. So he's a player that is going to be intriguing. Jared Hocker, the guard out of Texas A&M. A couple of intriguing running backs. B.J. Emmons out of Florida Atlantic. He was a five-star recruit going to Alabama and had a million running backs there, so he had nowhere to go. Ended up transferring a couple times. Is it Florida Atlantic to end his career? So they're going to look at him just because of his pedigree. And Josh Johnson, who, by the way, will be jumping on our podcast tomorrow as our special guest. So we're looking forward to that. He is maybe the player I've got right behind Kate Johnson as far as having a good chance to really push DJ Dallas and Travis Homer for a roster spot. I think that highly of this kid, hard-nosed runner with explosiveness, rushed for over 1,200 yards 2 years ago during the 2019 season, had 12 touchdowns that year too, and he's around 215 pounds, 5'9", 215. He's right in that wheelhouse size-wise the Seahawks like, and so you got a couple running backs that are intriguing there as well. We've just mentioned a bunch of different names that could have an opportunity to compete. This is a really, really sound all-around undrafted class if they end up signing all of these guys.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, you know. And one of the players that I'm most excited about, and it's not just because of that he was a terrific player at the collegiate level, but just because of who he is and what he represents, the Army linebacker, John Rattigan. And before you just say, okay, you know, Seattle is just bringing in a guy because he played at Army, watch the tape. This guy is physical. He's instinctive. He was playing behind another linebacker who was an all-conference pick at Army that wound up sticking in the NFL a year ago. And so Rattigan kind of gets his opportunity and really made some eye-popping plays for Army this year. We talked about the concerns at the linebacker position. I think this guy is a middle linebacker. He doesn't have enough speed, in my opinion, to be able to play on the outside. But if you're looking for somebody to maybe be able to push Ben Burke-Kirvin as the primary backup at that middle linebacker position or be able to also be a special teams demon, then John Rattigan from Army is another one to watch as well.
And I've got one more player to mention to round out all 12. We've listed the first 11, and I didn't know much about this kid until today. And then I popped in, I popped the film in, but I was watching on YouTube. But Jared Hewitt, the defensive tackle from Virginia Tech, 290 pounds, didn't know much about this kid, 9.5 sacks the last 2 years. And he looks like there's some athleticism to him. He fits most of the athletic thresholds the Seahawks have had at the defensive tackle position, especially the three-tech spot. He's got a little bit of twitch to him. He's got some moves. He can move guys with power a little bit. I look at him as a player. Cedric Lattimore, you better be ready for training camp because I think this is your next undrafted rookie at that position that could come in and make a little bit of noise in training camp with his pass rushing ability. And so Jared Hewitt, he's a player that's right in the size wheelhouse they like at that three-tech spot at 290 pounds. Has good production playing in one of the better conferences in college football, the ACC. And so he's another one that I'm going to be keeping a really close eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've basically broke down a player at every single position so far. I mean, Russell Wilson better be careful. Seattle isn't bringing some undrafted quarterback because just about every other position is getting a whole bunch of unexpected boost in talent through Seattle's undrafted free agent class.
I definitely think the fact Seattle had only three draft picks really helped them in persuading some of these players to come out to Seattle. And of course, their reputation being able to develop undrafted players too. It's one of the hot spots every year. You add those two things together, it shouldn't be a surprise that they've got a lot of talent in this group. When I returned in the third quarter, I had a chance to break down Seattle's selection of Stone Forsythe out of Florida in the sixth round in last week's draft. I'm going to be joined by Zach Goodall of All Gators with the Sports Illustrated Network to break down Forsythe's fit in Seattle, what his ceiling might be, and what position's the best fit for him moving forward with his new team heading into the NFL. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. The Seahawks bolstering their offensive line during the 2021 NFL draft when they traded up in the sixth round to get Florida tackle Stone Forsythe. Joining me to break down Forsythe's fit in Seattle, Zach Goodall of All Gators. Not a better name out there for an offensive lineman than Stone Forsythe, is there?
No, I mean, I'm sure Seattle Twitter has already seen the tweet, right, of the rock and the stone that he tweeted a couple years ago. If you haven't, go and look on Stone Forsythe's Twitter. I think he's either got it pinned or you can look for it in media. It's legendary.
Yeah, I shared it around, and I think it's been making rounds on Seahawks Twitter. It's been a popular topic since he brought up the rock during our post-draft press conference that we had with Mr. Forsythe. But the thing that really is bizarre to me, there may not have been a prospect that had a wider spectrum in terms of where draft experts thought he was going to fall. I saw some of the big-time draft experts were thinking he could go as early as the second round, and then I saw some that had undraftable grades. Mel Kiper had him as his 30th tackle in this class, which I don't know about you, but find me 29 tackles in this draft class that are better than Stone Forsythe, and I'll show you somebody that doesn't know football.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I didn't get a chance to evaluate the entire tackle class, but I can tell you what, look at a guy that's 6'8", 307, above average arm length. He's an above average athlete for all tackles on mock draftable dating back to 1999. And that doesn't weigh for the fact that he's 6'8". Like, when you think about it like that, he's a pretty top tier athlete for a player of his size. And you look at where the league has gone, right? Obviously, run blocking is important. I'm not going to ever say otherwise. But the league has gone towards passing the ball. It's a pass-happy league. If you're going to take a flyer, especially on day three, like the Seattle Seahawks did with Forsythe, on an offensive tackle, ideally you want that, you know, great caliber, long athlete who stands out in pass protection, and you try and work on that run blocking ability, right? Because when teams are going so much heavy pass, you want guys that can pass block. And, I mean, Forsythe, you look at the advanced stats, you look at the film against Georgia and Alabama, and he was one of the better pass protectors among either tackle position, really, in college football this past year.
You mentioned the pass protection. That really is the calling card for this kid, because it looks like he's really lighting his feet on the film that I've had a chance to watch. The Georgia game was the one that jumped out to me. I thought that was the best game that I've so far watched from him. And so you look at his fit in Seattle's offense. Aside from just the footwork standpoint, what else about his game has allowed him to be so successful in pass protection? Because I believe he only gave up 2 sacks on over 500 pass pro snaps last year for the Gators.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I really should probably go back and watch each snap to make sure that they've got the grades right. But they say that not only did he not allow more than 2 sacks and I think 8 pressures on the year, He didn't allow a sack against Georgia or Alabama. And I don't remember those from my initial rewatches of the game when I was covering them week by week. He did an amazing job against the best competition defensively that he was facing during the year. And it's also, you know, the typical SEC powerhouses, like that type of competition. He did a fantastic job shutting guys down in pass protection. You know, I mentioned his athleticism. He's pretty agile. You said it too. He moves well on his feet for a guy that big. He uses his length well on top of that, to where he might not be the most powerful guy specifically with his lower body, but with his upper body, I mean, he can match your footwork and then he can deliver a strike. He's pretty good at getting guys off of their initial moves and making them forced to counters. And he may not ever beat the best speed rushers, because when you're 6'8", even if you're athletic, like, there's only as much you can handle when it comes to a pure speed rusher. But I would give him good odds, at least, I guess, against most speed rushers until he gets up to that upper echelon. And then he might start to, you know, have trouble when he's got to spin his feet around and stuff like that. But those are things you work on. That's why you take a 6-round pick on a guy like Stone Forsythe.
Yeah, that's why you take a flyer on him. And he's certainly going to have an adjustment period with Russell Wilson being the quarterback, because no offense to Kyle Trask, but he doesn't have the improv or mobility that Mr. Wilson does. So that's going to be a little bit of a switch up. Any tackle that comes into the league has to deal with that. You mentioned the run blocking earlier. This seemed to be the general consensus from all draft experts. That's the area of his game that needs to improve the most. And he told us in our press conference that he certainly agrees with that. But part of it was that Florida just didn't run the football very much. He thinks that had a lot to do with it too. He was really able to shore up his pass protection because they were slinging the ball over the place. What have you seen from him as a run blocker? And do you think that that is an area that he still can be really solid in the pros? Or is that an area that there may be some long-term concern for him going to Seattle?
I would think that there's some concern for sure. I mean, like you've mentioned, the analysts in general say that when you're 6'8", you're just generally not going to get much leverage as a run defender. Getting low, getting your hands beneath the shoulder pads and able to drive guys out with lower pad level at that point. That's just not going to be his calling card when he's as big of a dude as he is. At the same time, he mentioned it as well. Florida not only didn't run the ball that much, they didn't run it well. And it wasn't just on him. You can look at the entire right side of their offensive line when you do your film studies, and that's pretty much all I need to say about that. You can get the laugh yourself. It just wasn't a consistent unit, particularly in run blocking over the past 2 years. They didn't really have a guy at running back that had elite breakaway speed that could take advantage of a small hole and get out of there. And as a whole, the run game stalled. And they looked towards Kyle Trask. They looked towards Kyle Pitts, Kadarius Toney, Van Jefferson a year ago. And they look at it and they go, why do we need to run the ball? That was pretty much Mullen's answer at any point. I disagreed with it. I pressed him on it because I think that they needed some balance, and it could have helped in games like Alabama or LSU and some other close games. But they just generally didn't do it. They didn't give Forsythe many opportunities to get better at it because they didn't run the ball much or very well. So, you know, who's to say? It depends on what his next offensive line coach tries to hammer out of him. Seattle obviously has enjoyed running the ball a bit more than Florida did last year. With proper coaching, I think Stone's a guy that receives coaching pretty well. There's going to be limitations, but you'd hope that he can at least get better.
And I think this shows a little bit of a change of the guard in how Seattle's going to be moving forward with this offense, because they've got a new coordinator in Shane Waldron. And if he's going to run things like Sean McVay did in LA, I would anticipate there's going to be more wide zone. And Pete Carroll kept bringing up his ability to get outside and block on the perimeter. So that tells me right there, they're going to be doing things a little bit differently with their run game. And Forsythe, they drafted him in part because they believe that he can succeed doing that. And that leads me to my last question here. He's entering a situation that's pretty ideal for a player that may need some time to develop, because the Seahawks do have two solid starters. They've got a really good one in Duane Brown on the left side that has shown no signs of slowing down. Going to be 36 in August, but still playing at a very high level. And Brandon Schell was a surprise last year at right tackle. But both of them are going to be free agents after 2021. They're in the final year of their contracts. And so this is a key year for them to start developing Forsythe potentially as a starter at the left or right tackle position as early as 2022. You look at his fit in Seattle and you look at his potential. What's the ceiling for this kid, and where do you think he ultimately ends up? Is he going to be a long-term left tackle, or is he going to end up staying on the right side?
I mean, I genuinely think he can do both. he held the left down so well against SEC competition that I don't necessarily see a reason why he'd need to move to the right side. He's long. He's not the longest tackle, but he's long. And I think that that will help him on the left, protecting the blind side a bit more than on the right side. With that being said, he's shown the ability to play both sides, handle both sides well against different type of edge rushers. I think ideally you make him your swing. I think you want to make him comfortable without rushing him onto the field whatsoever. Try and not put him on the field this year, but make him comfortable as your swing. Have him able to play both positions as a backup, able to step up if someone gets injured, if there needs to be some shuffling, something of the sort. He's used to that. They did that with him before he ever took on a starting role at Florida. And at Florida, even when the right side of the line struggled, they'd flip him back over to the right. So I think as long as you can build upon his versatility, he can do a lot for their offense and give the Seahawks some flexibility.
It does give them the flexibility to move forward with one or both of the tackles they've currently got, and they can fill the gaps with Forsythe. I believe that they're hoping he can be the heir apparent for Dwayne Brown. Time will tell if he's going to be able to step in for Dwayne Brown, who's been an all-pro twice. That's pretty big shoes to fill, even for a 6'8", 307-pound player of Forsythe's stature. Zach, I greatly appreciate you coming on and breaking down Seattle's latest offensive lineman.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You can follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to follow Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and the new Odyssey app. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll be joined by running back Josh Johnson, a member of Seattle's undrafted rookie free agent class. Plus, we'll begin our roster reset post-draft. We'll be checking out the depth chart, starting on the defensive side of the football at the defensive tackle position. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.